Anne.
Hi, Emily.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. It's an exciting day here in the world of law.
It's true. We have a new Supreme Court nomination to talk about, Solicitor General Elena Kagan. Start us off.
Once again, Obama did what we were signaled was going to happen. It came through the same way. It wasn't a surprise. We were eased into it. So the same way the Sotomayor nomination was rolled out, it happened the same way. I thought that was interesting and easy to take, easy to adjust to. So,
right. I think the White House is good at making the choice seem inevitable once it's made.
And you get a chance to get your objections in, and they get a chance to see what the objections are going to be.
Yeah.
So how bad is the bad stuff? People get to roll that out beforehand, and then they can pass over that person if they want to for that reason. But, the stuff wasn't bad enough, and that was his first pick. So same as with Sotomayor.
So do you feel excited about Kagan or skeptical and wary? Where are you falling on the spectrum?
Well, I don't want too liberal of a justice. So even though I had been saying that he should appoint a liberal, if he's a liberal, let him appoint a liberal. And I would like to hear a strong liberal justice defend liberal constitutional interpretation and so on. But I really don't want too much of a liberal. I like more of a moderate. Maybe that's what she'll be. But basically, she's a big enigma, and we don't really know what we're getting.
I think that's exactly
But that's a good thing. I'm positive. I have a good feeling about that. I think that's nice.
And do you think it's a problem that she's never been a judge?
Not that she's never been a judge, no, because, she was appointed to be a judge and then it was held up, so she didn't get that. She's obviously would be qualified to be a judge. She hasn't gone through that stage, but, she clerked for Justice Marshall. She clerked for a lower federal court judge as well, and she's been Solicitor General. I think all of those things taken together give her experience with the Supreme Court that is along the same lines or maybe even better than being a judge. The idea that judges are the best people is a little... not quite true. I mean, we've had some great justices who weren't judges. How do you feel about that?
I don't care about whether she's been a judge or not, but I thought that the White House overreached in trying to frame her as someone who, partly because she has not been a judge, is in touch with ordinary people. There was a lot of kind of, right? And I mean, she is coming from Harvard Law School. That doesn't seem to me to be where that many ordinary
laughable.
People hung out. And I just thought it was overdone. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't think there's any kind of an argument like that. I mean, the idea that we're getting diversity on the court or anything like that, I don't see that. But I think she was selected because there was an idea that she brought some special skill with respect to dealing with people, as if this managing Supreme Court justices and wrangling their votes is similar to running a law school and getting professors to get together and vote, let's say, for an appointments candidate. And I think that's a huge mistake. I was just listening to her first oral argument before the court as a Solicitor General, which was actually her first oral argument in Citizens United, the big campaign corporate spending on political campaigns case. And I was surprised at how badly she did, really, trying to influence the justices. I don't think she was really hearing what they were saying or responding that well to what they were saying. So I don't know that she will be influential in influencing them in the milieu of the Supreme Court. I think that the idea that there's a correspondence between Harvard Law School and the Supreme Court is truly absurd and naive to think.
Right. I mean, it seems to me that the people who chose her, I mean, including President Obama, they know her. I mean, she's part of the administration. And so I imagine...
And he worked as a professor with her at University of Chicago.
Exactly. So it seems to me that they probably have some idea about her ability to reach out to other people that's not simply based on her tenure as dean at Harvard. Or even, maybe not at all watching her at oral argument. There's some other sense that, if you know someone really well, you can plausibly see it. But for those of us who don't know her, we're being asked to take it on faith.
I just don't believe that you influence people on the Supreme Court the way you influence them in the more social environment of developing a community at a law school where everybody has this shared interest in getting along and serving the students and presenting a certain kind of an image, that you do a lot of those things by having them over to dinner and doing social things and smiling
soft
and being
power.
Nice and accommodating and trading votes. You vote for mine, I'll vote for yours, putting coalitions together. I just don't think Supreme Court cases cases are decided that way. I think that it's a much more technical, skilled application of law. I mean, even though there's more to deciding cases than let's just look at the law and say what it means, that's naive. I think it's also naive to think that you can get Justice Kennedy to vote on your side by sweet talking him or something like that. Yeah. I just don't think the court works that way, and I think it's insulting and would be received in an icy fashion if anyone were to think that that's the way you can come in as a new person and start moving them around the way you move Harvard law professors around. I don't think the Supreme Court justices have a whole lot of respect for law professors, mm-hmm. from what I've read. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well,
I don't think they read our articles. No, the thing in her favor is she didn't really write too many articles.
Yes,
she's not really.
I was reading some comments on something I wrote today, and one of the commenters was saying, "Oh, great! You know, next time I'm going up for a job, I'll explain why I'm not qualified for it, and that's how I'll get it." I think there is something funny about that in her case that, particularly on the outside, that just seems odd. It's as if she's kind of sailed through without going through all the usual steps. And
yeah, so how do you think that works? A lot of people would like to get on the Supreme Court. Why was that a way to get on the Supreme Court?
It's the million-dollar question. When you figure that out, Anne, that'll make you the next Supreme Court justice.
First, be friends with the president? Is that the way?
I don't know. Yeah, just impress everyone around you without actually ever saying or doing anything controversial or
be well-liked. Don't step on anyone's toes. I don't think that's the way to be influential once you're on the court. When I think of a law professor going on the court, I think of Felix Frankfurter. But like he was a very illustrious scholar, and I think on the court he tried to influence people by being smarter than everyone else, being very erudite and knowing more about things. That's not the social approach, and I just don't picture her being that kind of a law professor. I don't think she was a big scholar. I think she was someone who always had these more political aspirations and always wanted to get on the Supreme Court, and being a law professor was really just a stepping stone. I don't think she was particularly serious about writing the articles and establishing herself as a scholar at all. She had trouble getting tenure, hadn't really written the way one writes to get tenure at the University of Chicago.
Yeah, there was a really funny moment at Senator Leahy's press conference today where he said that something like, you know, and I think it would be hard to find a greater legal scholar. And I think he had just gotten really carried away. I was like, really? Well, I wanted to ask you about something else that you were writing about today. You were predicting that we would soon enough have as many as 5 women on the Supreme Court. And you actually didn't think this was like a great feminist advance.
Well, you know, I've noticed one thing is the way President Clinton had Madeleine Albright as Secretary of State, and now Hillary Clinton became Secretary. I sort of see Secretary of State as a way of, we'll give a woman a really illustrious position, but she'll be over there where she's not really in the office, not really in the close inner circle. So I think that presidents, especially Democratic presidents, see it as being important to tend to the women and to have the, good faith look of being supportive of women's issues and so on. Women need to progress, but they don't really get into the really close inner circle of advisors. So I think when these really high-profile positions come up but are not actually close to the president, that there's a motivation to put a woman in those positions. And I also think there are a lot of women who are going to law school or moving up in the meritocracy of law and establishing these elite credentials. There are more women than men, I think, going to law school now. And I think it's kind of a place to tuck women away in the scholarly work, doing the, reading and the writing, but not really being in the immediate, type sphere of power.
Wouldn't you rather be Elena Kagan or Hillary Clinton in the jobs that they have now than Rahm Emanuel? Like, what's so great about being
But I'm a woman. Man? I have the female juices flowing in me. So, yeah, let me read and carefully write my materials.
But you're putting that down and making and dismissing it as if, like, these weren't positions of enormous power.
They are. I'm just saying
totally
I think
take these jobs over Rahm Emanuel's job. If this is, like, tokenism, I'll have more of it, please.
But think of the people who become president, the kind of people who operate in that sphere, who take on the greatest power in the world, and then who do they surround themselves with? At that point, they're not doing the gestures of furthering the interests of various groups. That's serious. And then you see who they get. They seem to get the men at that point. Now they still have to make up for it by appointing women, so they'll make the woman the whatever, Secretary of the Interior or something like that. So certain illustrious cabinet positions are typically given to women. And I just think being a judge is going to be another one of those things. It will become women's work. Now, I don't want to say that if something's women's work, that then it gets denigrated and it seems to be lesser. But I just think that there's a dynamic that these men, these powerful, you know, world-level power seekers who become president are not really interested in working closely with women. They want to give women their respect, but those women will be tucked away in different places.
Well, the exception to the rule in the Obama administration is Valerie Jarrett, who does seem to be close to the president and have real power.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just feel sort of unworried about this. Like, if the problem women have is that they turn out to have a majority of the seats on the Supreme Court, I think I'll be pretty psyched about that.
Yeah, I know, I will be too, but that's why it's a good strategy, that people will be appeased. People will be pleased, not just appeased, but pleased. I think the time may well come when all 9 justices are Supreme Court, are women. And that there'll be a majority of women from then on out. I think that it will tend to be a place where highly accomplished women are given their due. That's where we will put the women. I think it's a feminist problem that ought to be taken seriously.
Well, we'll have to see.
The very fact that you're satisfied with it is part of the problem.
I guess so. But what am I supposed to be the idea that I have to, like, want women to always be White House Chief of Staff, and that seems to me like a really annoying job. If you were going
to
argue, I thought for a second you were going to argue that this meant it would be harder to elect a woman president. That would move me a little more, but that doesn't seem like what you're saying.
I think it may be that it'll be very hard for us to ever accept a woman for president. I mean, why did Barack Obama get past Hillary Clinton? How exactly did that happen? I think we should, we should worry about that. She's as close as anyone ever got. How did this upstart with so little experience get in there and get past her? Why did that happen?
It was super appealing, and she campaigned in a not as compelling way, right? I mean, we watched it all unfold over many months. We're getting away, though, now from the Supreme Court. I have another Supreme Court question.
Okay.
You have been concerned in the past about religious diversity on the Supreme Court, and if Kagan is confirmed, we are going to have 6 Catholics and 3 Jews. This even strikes me as odd.
I spoke up when it was still in the office.
And no Midwesterners, what do you think?
Well, she did work at the University of Chicago Law School for a while, but she grew up on...
Didn't all the
female justices, current justices, they all grew up in New York, Sotomayor, Ginsburg
You're
is associated
right,
with New York.
Yeah.
Kagan grew up on the, or lived on the Upper West Side, very much, not just East Coast, but New York women.
Yeah, it's totally
why are the only women that get the job New York women? I mean, and this is another feminist point. It's sort of like, well, I mean, you have to be... It's very hard to break through this glass ceiling as a woman, and if you're to do it, you're going to have to at least be a New York woman.
Fewer models, right? That's I think how I would put it is that because there are simply fewer of them, there are fewer models, and it may just be coincidence that we have 3 women in New York. We just don't know the answer to that yet, but it sort of looks fishy at the moment.
And it may just be a coincidence that the Supreme Court is entirely made up of Catholics and Jews.
But do you think that just happened?
I think it's beyond weird. I don't think it's just by accident. I think it happened for various reasons.
Because this was a safe place to put Catholics and Jews? Because they like to study a lot? No, that's not what you're
referring to. I don't know. I don't have a specific reason, and if I did and I tried to articulate it really quickly, it would probably sound bad.
You'd come out wrong.
And you know, you can get in a lot of trouble by saying the wrong thing about these groups, you know. Thinking about
that's
that Harvard
true.
Story the other day.
Right, that's true. there
is a kind of an idea that, maybe Protestants, because they were the majority group in the past, there's no worry about giving them their due because they already got more than their due. So,
well, I think
if they're out on the outs for a while.
Group that's up in arms about the idea of no Protestants on the Supreme Court, although perhaps there should be.
Well, I think some of it is that conservatives and people who care, who would be on the conservative Christian evangelical side, may be happy with the Catholics that are there because they sort of indicate a pro-choice position or a traditional social position on various issues, and so they do feel represented by that point of view.
What do you think about the criticism of Kagan for the way she handled Don't Ask, Don't Tell when she was at Harvard? This involves the Solomon Amendment,
mm-hmm.
this Congress's effort to enforce equal access for military recruiters on university campuses.
Well, as I understand it, she came into Harvard and that was already the policy, and she was probably channeling what the faculty already wanted. I mean, we had the same thing at the University of Wisconsin. If you have a law school that tells its students, we don't discriminate based on sexual orientation and any of these other grounds like race and so forth, if you're going to have on campus, in the building, interviewing, and there's an employer who isn't going to who won't take interviews from some of the people, who refuses to hire a category of individual who you want to feel welcome in the school, and you have a policy of protecting and not and defending against discrimination to give the facilities of the school to an employer who is dedicated to the policy of discriminating against them, there's a real collision there. And to want to have the, I mean, the problem that I had with the Solomon Amendment was that it was using federal spending to bully schools into adopting the federal policy. I think it would have been better if it was up to the schools to decide what they wanted to do, and I would be more likely to defend the idea that the schools ought to provide interviews maybe for the students who want to go into the military. But the idea that the federal spending, this huge amount of federal spending, which I think is already questionable, from a conservative position, I think it's questionable, to use that spending to bully schools into adopting the federal policy rather than having the decentralized academic freedom to have their own policy with respect to discrimination. I have a problem with that. I think conservatives should have a policy with that. Even if you think the policy, even if you think the policy should be that the military should be allowed to interview in the building, and you have that conservative position, I think you should still support the position that it was wrong to use federal spending to bully people into accepting the top-down pressure to do it that way. Let them have the decentralized liberty to set their own policy as a school.
I just want to add one wrinkle to this because I think it's getting lost a little bit in some of this discussion, which is to say that when Kagan was dean, Harvard was not actually barring the military recruiters from the buildings. Harvard was saying that they needed to come in under the auspices of a Student Veterans Association.
Yes, yeah, that's right. They had a more moderate position.
Harvard pulled back further from that, and in fact, by the time Kagan was dean, that wasn't even the policy anymore. So I feel like there's this notion that she banned military recruiters from the law school, and it's just not true.
It does show her being a more moderate person, someone who would compromise and be in the center. I think, actually, people on the left should have more of a problem than people on the right.
Right, and in fact, there has been some pretty heated criticism of her, notably from Glenn Greenwald at Salon.
Yeah, I saw that.
More about her executive power. I actually think he's doing a huge favor to the Obama administration. They must cheer every time he posts because it makes it seem as if, you know, she is very centrist and mainstream, which I actually think is probably right. But do you think there is anything to this critique of her views on executive power, or do we just not really know the answer?
Well, I think he has appointed someone from the inside of the executive branch, so she's going to have the basic sympathy with executive power. She's going to want to uphold whatever exercises of power he does, and, you know, he's not, compared to the way he campaigned, he's taking some pretty strong executive power positions, as I think any president would do. So I think you may end up with someone who reminds me a little bit of Justice White, who was appointed by John F. Kennedy, someone who is sort of should be a liberal because he was appointed by a Democrat, but actually has some pretty strong positions about federal power. So we might be about to see some things of that sort. Maybe Justice Scalia will have an ally for his unitary executive theories.
Maybe. I don't actually see that in Kagan's writing. It just seems super dense to me and not really grappling with the national security issues that have been most at the forefront. But we will see. And thanks for discussing all of this.
Okay, so right now, what do you think? Can I just ask you one more question? What do you think is going to happen this summer? Do you think it's going to be pretty dull and obvious sort of the hearings? Or do you think she will take on the senators and we might have some fireworks or anything leading up to the fall elections? Do you think there's some good entertainment in the offing here, or is it all going to be very routine from here on in?
Well, I think barring some unforeseen political detonation, that it probably, it's in her interest to keep everything as dull and obvious as possible.
Yeah.
The Republicans can't totally let that happen without trying to shake things up because of the elections, as you just mentioned, but I think it's going to be tough. I mean, they were sort of fumbling out of the gate today, I thought. They didn't have very much. What do you think?
Well, I thought it was especially bad to talk about something she said about Thurgood Marshall that had to do with the way the Constitution was imperfect at the beginning.
When he was
it was imperfect at the beginning because of slavery.
Right.
So
it was
this is going to be the issue?
You don't think the three-fifths clause, I hope we can all agree, the three-fifths clause was effective.
Yeah, that's just silly.
I agree. Yeah, that's true.
So hopefully they won't trip all over themselves. And I think probably in the end they do want her rather than who we would get next if we didn't have her. But I think they should use the occasion to, you know, make some good points leading up to the fall election. But I don't think we'll find out much more about her. The routine now, the litany is all pretty ritualistic and dull. So I'm expecting dullness and maybe some charm, some smiles.
All right. Well, we'll see if we get dullness plus smiles. That sounds like a good, safe prediction to me. Thank you, Anne.
Okay, thank you.
Always.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Bye.